This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Valiant Comics and the all-new Exo Manowar number 1. On sale in comic shops everywhere, right now. New York Times best-selling writer Matt Kent and rising star Tomas Giarello kick off a brand new beginning for Valiant's flagship character with a new ongoing series in part 1 of Soldier, a perfect jumping on point and the opening chapter of 2017's biggest new series. If you're looking for a place to start with Valiant, this is it. And we've talked a little bit about reading Exo Manowar number 1 on the past couple episodes of the show, but if somehow you have slept on it after our recommendations, please don't do that. Please go to your local comic shop and pick up a copy of that. If your comic shop has copies, go buy it. If they don't, buy it on Comixology, because it is such a good first issue of comics with such fantastic art by Tomas Giarello. It is a beautiful comic book.
Yeah, and you talk about it being a good first issue, but it's what really strikes me about it is that it feels like it does so much. Like, it doesn't just set up the new status quo for Exo, although it certainly does do that. It's got, like, a whole setup of the new status quo at the start of things. Then it has, like, a sort of escalating action going on with Eric. And then it gives us a huge battle scene. And then it finishes the battle scene. Like, it does a lot in a single issue to get you into Exo Manowar and present you with what's going to be going on over the next, I guess, 4 arcs that Matt Kent is going to be doing on this book. It's so good, and it's honestly, I think you can tell in our voices when we talk about this comic, it's really genuinely something that we love.
And I think it works both as a starting point for new readers and a really great continuation of the Exo Manowar story for people who've been keeping up with the book or have familiarity with Exo. Maybe they've dipped in and out of the new Valiant Exo. Maybe they read the old Valiant Exo. So if you have somehow not picked up Exo Manowar number 1, go do that.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that War Rocket Ajax to bring back his body?
Everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the ultimate thrill ride, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, is the 2 in 23 and 2, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you?
Oh, I'm ready to go.
That's, give me the green light.
That's a song I've heard approximately 1 million times over the past month. And it's fun.
When was it decided that WrestleMania needed a halftime show? And can we go back in time and stop that decision from being made?
I guarantee you that Vince, after the XFL folded, Vince was like, we gotta be more like the NFL, damn it. And then they started having halftime shows. That's halftime shows that are actually 2/3 of the way through the show.
Yeah, look, we'll get into it. As you can probably tell from listening, this is going to be this year's War Rocket Ajax WrestleMania talk about some wrestling episode. We're also going to be talking about a lot of stuff, so don't close the podcast app just yet. But mainly today, Matt and I are going to be going back over the events of WrestleMania 33, which I will just say now was a less arduous 7 hours than last year.
Yeah, I've got a good way to, I think, to encapsulate what WrestleMania 33 was all about. We're going to be talking about it match by match, kind of reviewing how the show was. That's why this is going up a little later than a regular episode. We wanted to talk about WrestleMania after rather than before this year.
Yeah, in all honesty, what happened was I booked guests for the show thinking that WrestleMania was a week later than it actually was.
Before we get into talking about WrestleMania, it's time for us to thank our newest supporters on Patreon.
These are currently my favorite people in the world. Because they are the ones going to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they're kicking in as little as $1 a month to genuinely help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. Who do we have this week, Matt?
We've got quite a list for reasons that may be related to what we're going to talk about here in a minute in Checks and Recs. First off, we got Fiona Adams.
Oh, thank you, Fiona.
Fiona, who we saw at Emerald City Comic Con and is a comics creator on her own merits. Thank you, Fiona.
Jim, a longtime fan of the show, a longtime supporter of us. Fiona's great. Thanks, Fiona.
Jim Bradfield.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
Daniel Mosier.
Thank you, Daniel.
Julian Williams.
Oh, thank you, Julian.
Daniel Mulhall.
Well, thank you, Daniel.
R. Ballion.
Thank you, R. Matt, what do you think that R stands for?
I would say rough and ready.
I would say robot.
Justin McNeil.
Thank you, Justin.
And James Reed.
Oh, thank you, James.
Those are people, all of whom have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kicked in as little as $1 a month to help us out, help keep the show going, help us, as Chris said, keep paying those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. I will get that right someday. And
one day, Matt. I believe in you.
Yeah, someday I'll get there. Also, those people get ad-free episodes of the show. At certain levels, they get bonus audio that nobody else gets to listen to, exclusive backer art, line-stepping privileges, and a whole lot more. So if that sounds like something that you would be into, and you're just into the idea of helping us out a little bit, please go over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in a little bit to help us keep chugging along. And Chris, I think we're going to feed into something related here in a second.
I got one more thing to say about Patreon. This is not something we usually highlight. I think everybody kind of gets the idea of Patreon, which is that it's a patronage. You patronize us. You kind of kick in the money and it just rolls through every month, and it's a sort of a consistent thing. But one thing that I don't think we talk about too often is that if you're curious about the kind of bonus content we have, if you're curious about the sort of what we do for the Patreon backers, you can. There is no obligation for Patreon. You literally can cancel any time. So if you just want to see what we've got in there, you can just kick in $5 this month. Check it out. Download some of the bonus content. We've got some really fun stuff. Matt and I really getting in depth on the first two verses of Stay Fly by 3-6 Mafia while we were very tired in a hotel room back in Seattle. That's in there. We've got the big Greg Schiegel trivia contest, the completion of that you heard on the show a couple weeks ago. That's in there. You can sample all that, and if it's something that you want to keep up with, then you keep up with it. If it's not, then you can, you know, we'll catch your ass down the road, as the man says. But yeah, you can absolutely just check it out and give it a shot for $5.
Most recently, I did a little short mini interview with Chris about Army of Darkness, the Army of Darkness comic that he is writing with Chad Bowers. We talked a little bit about the Army of Darkness franchise and Evil Dead and the Army of Darkness license, which is interesting in and of itself. So if that's only a couple minutes long, you can just listen to that. So like Chris said, if you just want to give it a taste, you can kick in $5, and if that's all you want, then that's all you have to. You can knock it down to a buck after that, or you could not pledge anymore entirely. So, yeah, give that a shot. All right, Chris, it's time for Checks and Recs.
Oh, let's do it, Matt.
Chris, what's going on with you this week?
I lost my job, Matt. What's your check?
I lost a side gig as well, even though I haven't been doing as much for Comics Alliance over the last couple years. I had been writing TV recaps for them pretty regularly, and little bits and pieces here along the way. But Chris, it was your day job, like what you were doing day to day, writing and Those things are looking for a home now, I guess you would say.
Yeah, I am certainly looking for a new writing home. So if you haven't heard, if this is the first time you've popped your head in to see what your pals Chris and Matt are doing this week, Comics Alliance went on a quote-unquote hiatus last week, which the owners of the site have shut it down, essentially. The site, as far as I know, is going to stay up. I know that a couple people are out there backing up some of the stuff that I've written because they don't want to lose it, which is nice. But as far as I know, all the existing content is going to stay up and continue to be monetized. They just won't be paying anyone to make new content, which means that I have been laid off. Here's a fun thing about that. On Wednesday night, I got a super minor, I hesitate to even call it an injury. I kind of fell doing a box jump at CrossFit, and I just got a big bruise on my shin, and it hurt real bad, but it's fine. Thursday morning, Aiden's mom was in town, and we were taking her out to breakfast, and Aiden got the car a little too close to the curb and popped the tire and bent the rim, so I had to deal with that. And then while I was sitting in the parking lot of the garage to get my tire and rims fixed, I got the call about Comics Alliance. And then I had to drive 3 hours by myself to a convention. and then on Sunday, I had to drive 3 hours back by myself. That was not the most fun thing in the world. But I do want everybody to know that I genuinely appreciate everybody saying nice things. Matt, you really said some nice stuff and did some nice stuff for me and Aiden. This is extremely ill-timed for me because I am getting married next month, which I don't think I've actually talked about on the show before, but that is happening. So right now I'm trying not to fret over it too much. I've got a couple other irons in the fire, as you know. I've obviously got a couple comics that I'm writing, which is really awesome, and I'm looking forward to being able to kind of devote a little more time both to those and to create our own stuff that I'm doing. There's actually a new issue of Skater X that's going to be coming out in April. I am without a day job and kind of the major source of income, which is why I'm really pushing that Patreon. But I do want to thank everybody for reaching out. I want to thank everybody who said some nice things about Comics Alliance and what we accomplished. If you are curious, as far as I know, there are no plans to sell the site like there were when this happened the last time. Which, Matt, I don't know if you remember, but it also happened the last Thursday in March.
I do remember that because I was at C2E2 to cover it.
Yes.
And Caleb just messaged me to say, hey, don't worry about covering anything at C2E2.
Yeah. I'm okay for right now. I'm obviously a little bummed out and a little miffed about the whole situation. But again, we do a lot of stone cold quotes here on the show, but be that as it may, it was what it was. And obviously we're gonna keep doing Ajax and maybe have a little free time to do some additional bonus content, maybe some more fun stuff. We were gonna finally get last month's Movie Fighters done, I think, at some point this week.
I just want to jump in to say, if you are curious about what is gonna happen with Comics Alliance, well, first of all, let me point out, even though this happened on March 31st, and April Fool's Day was on a Saturday, this is not an April Fool's joke. Some people thought it was. It's not. It'd be a weird joke.
That'd be a weird prank.
Yeah, it would be a weird prank to pull on all of us to tell us that our services are no longer needed. Also, you may see new content go up on Comics Alliance, but it's only going to be repurposed content from other Town Square Media sites. You may have noticed, stuff going up on Comics Alliance from Screen Crush, which is another Town Square Media site. They may still be doing that, but there will be no new original to Comics Alliance content going up on Comics Alliance. That is my understanding. So if you see that and you get confused by it, know that that's what it is, and it's not that the site is back. Because to our knowledge, Comics Alliance as a content generating website is no more. That is what we believe and understand.
Yeah, and for me specifically, that means that Ask Chris is dead. Ranger Station is dead. Hedging Your Bets is dead. The Bizarro Back Issues column is dead. At least as far as it relates to those things happening on ComicsAlliance.com. Under those titles. So, I don't know. Like, I have thought about, like, today, this morning, someone was like, hey, I guess you're not going to read any more Sonic the Hedgehogs. And I was like, well, I still got them all. Like, maybe I'll talk about them on YouTube. Maybe I'll do something. Maybe I'll figure out how to edit video. Or maybe I'll figure out how to edit a podcast, Matt. I've been doing this for about 8 years and have no idea how that's done.
It's a lot of just beating your head against a wall until it sounds somewhat okay, and then you put it on the internet.
Yeah, but in the meantime, thank you to everyone for an incredible groundswell, both of like of support for the show, of support for me, of support for the Comics Line staff, people like Kieran and Elle, who you've heard on this show before, people like Katie Schenkel, who's going to be our guest next week, was a Comics Alliance writer. Just thanks to everyone for that, and keep listening, and I'll let you know what's going on as we move forward. Matt, how about you? You got any new stuff, or is that about it?
I do want to mention for my check really quickly, we are hitting crunch time. We are hitting the last leg of my Kickstarter for Everything Will Be Okay, which is a little quick 5-issue miniseries that I'm hoping to get out into the world. We have, as of this recording, about 10 days left and change to get all our funding, and we're not halfway to being funded, which is not a great sign. I am not super hopeful that we're going to make it, but there is always a chance we could get a big push here in the last 10 days. So if you have been hesitant to kick in, but you think it looks like a cool comic, you know, we've got a $10 level on the Kickstarter where you get all 5 issues digitally. That's $2 per digital issue, which I think is not half bad of a price. So if you can help us out in that way, that would be great. If you cannot help us out monetarily because, say, you work for a website that got shut down, if say that were to happen, just helping us, you know, put a bullhorn up to the project and get the word out about it would be incredibly helpful. It is extremely hard to get people to pay attention to a Kickstarter project. I know from both sides how hard that is, because I've done Kickstarter projects myself, and I work on a podcast where people pitch us talking about or interviewing people for Kickstarter projects, and it's hard to fit everybody in. So I understand why it's hard to get folks to pay attention sometimes, but any help to push us over that line would be great, because I would really like to get this comic in people's hands. And if we do not get funded, I do not know how we're going to do it, because I have to pay these artists. I can't just let them do the work for nothing, and I don't think they're going to. So that's the way it's going to have to go. So maybe we'll get funded, maybe we won't. I'm hoping for the best in the next 10 days. And any help that anybody can throw our way is super appreciated. All right, Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
Not getting laid. Tires? I feel like I had one, and I feel like it's gone now. I'll tell you what, here's my recommendation. I've talked about this a little bit on the show before. You know what I did a lot this weekend while I was in a hotel room that had terrible hotel Wi-Fi 3 hours away from my fiance? Played a lot of Warcraft 3.
Sure.
So now, my question to you is, I know that there's, like, fan content for Warcraft 3, and maybe, like, I'll just go out and treat myself to the Frozen Throne for $10, but, like, if there's, like, good single-player, like, mission story stuff out there, and I feel like there is, because this was a game that had so much of a fan community that it invented the MOBA, right? Like, then hit me up, holler at your boy, send me an email, let me know, like, what they are, how I get them, how I put them on my computer. Because I am very curious. I would like to play a little more. I find it very soothing and calming. That is what I would like to recommend, and what I would like to recommend you to do for me in this trying time.
I'll go ahead and tell you everything I know about fan-created content in Warcraft 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Well, I wasn't speaking directly to you, Matt. I was hoping that maybe our listeners could fill in the gaps. I guess it's weird because I am actually talking to you, but that previous thing was directed at the listeners.
I know. I just wanted to do a funny gag.
That's fine. You're the good bits boy. That is the truth.
I'm going to make a card that just says Matt Wilson, Matt D. Wilson, good bits boy. That's the best title I've ever had in my entire life. My recommendation this week is a film that might be on its way out of theaters by now, but I finally saw it this weekend. Logan. Logan has got a reputation as being very good, and I agree that it is. It's very much my reaction to seeing the trailer, which was, huh, that looks like a movie. Because I feel like the past few X-Men movies have not had that feeling, where they look like real movies. They're more just like colorful jumping fests. Logan feels like a real movie. I will say that, Chris, I spent a lot of Logan wondering how you would feel about it.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Because let me tell you what there's a lot of in Logan.
Okay.
Murder. There's a lot of stabbing death in Logan.
Yeah,
by our heroes.
Matt, he is a guy who has knives for hands. Like, I'm not so hardline on this whole superhero shouldn't kill people thing that I think a guy with knives for hands shouldn't stab people.
Yeah, I think it's okay when it's Wolverine, generally. And I hope I'm not giving anything away with this. There's a lot of, and she has knives for hands as well, so I guess it makes sense to a degree as well. But there's a lot of, like, 9 or 10-year-old Laura Kinney doing it, too. And, I mean, I guess I get it, because she's little girl Wolverine. But, like, it reached a point where I was just like, that is a lot of killing. There is a lot of killing in this movie. Even with the caveat that, you know, this is a guy with knives for hands. So it's not that it ruined the movie for me per se, because I can accept it to a degree with Wolverine, but boy, there was a lot of it. Like, boy, they were going for that R, besides Professor X dropping F-bombs. But like, the performances in the movie are stellar. Everybody's so good. There was a part in the movie where I leaned over to Marlene and I was like, Hugh Jackman is a good actor.
as though you have not at this point in your life seen like 5 movies with Hugh Jackman in them
where he was good, right? But like I just kind of had this moment where I was like, hey, Hugh Jackman's a genuinely good actor. And Patrick Stewart is amazing as always. The little girl who plays Laura is very good, like super good. And the villains don't get a lot of screen time or fleshed out all that much, but the actor who plays, who I would say is the actor or the villain who is on screen the most, is very magnetic. He's got a real presence on screen that helps him a lot. I think the character's name is Pierce. I don't know if he's got like a big comic counterpart or not.
Donald Pierce?
Is it Donald Pierce?
From the Hellfire Club?
I mean, that's not who he is in the movie. In the movie, he's just kind of like a mercenary guy. He definitely has screen presence that helps make him a more compelling bad guy throughout the movie. So if you have yet to see Logan, because I feel like I was probably one of the last ones to go see it in the movie theater, it is definitely worth watching. It is really good. Massive amounts of superheroes murdering people aside. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. I think we are going to skip comic reviews this week, partially because I have read exactly one comic book.
What comic book did you read?
I read that Space Ghost Green Lantern book.
How was it? Because I didn't read anything. This will be our comics review segment. I read zero comics, but I had several people, including Al Collins, say, "Hey, remember on Ajax, you said you wish you could take a month off and just get caught up? Congratulations."
The Space Ghost Green Lantern book I thought was very good. There are some nods to Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which is what I was hoping for and love and praying for. Ariel Olivetti's art is real, real good. And it's written by James Tynion in the IV and Christopher Sabella. So it's a well-written, two heroes meet and fight each other and then team up to help people kind of story. So I liked it. It was good. That's my review of Green Lantern and Space Ghost.
That was very Reading Rainbow-esque review.
You don't have to take my word for it.
All right, so that's comics reviews, everybody.
Let's talk about WrestleMania. All right, I said before, Chris, that I had an encapsulation in mind for WrestleMania 33. Do you have like a pithy take on this show? You said it was better than the year before, which I agree with. Little quick notes about the show overall?
I mean, no. The thing that I said is the thing that I felt like it. Last year's WrestleMania, even though we were hanging out together, we had a good time hanging out for Mania. It was the longest thing. It was unbelievably, it was literally 7 hours. And this WrestleMania is, again, expanding to fill its container, but I found it to be a much more enjoyable time. I will say that Aiden went to bed, about five matches from the end, because it had already gone on so long.
It was a better way to fill the 7 hours. I'll give it that. But it was still 7 hours long. WrestleMania should be shorter. For sure. Here's my pithy take on this year's WrestleMania, though. I think it was more good than bad, even though there was definitely some bad. What I think was mostly good, though, was moments more than matches. I feel like even more than in the past few years, this WrestleMania was more about the moments than what happened in the matches, or even their outcomes. I feel like people are going to forget the outcomes of these matches, largely. But they'll remember what happened after the match, or they'll remember, one spot from the match, in most cases. Which is fine. They talk about WrestleMania being about moments all the time.
Yeah.
But I feel like, there are a handful of really big moments that people are going to remember. Obviously, Undertaker leaving his hat and coat and gloves in the ring to signify his retirement. I think people are going to remember John Cena proposing.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to remember the Hardy Boys showing up.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to talk about that one.
And there's even smaller moments that I think people are going to remember, like Kevin Owens with his one finger on the rope.
Yeah, that shit was brilliant.
That is the thing from the match. That match people are going to remember, even though it was largely a very good match. So I think we're just going to run down the card, and if we have anything to say about a particular match, we'll say it. And if we don't, then we'll just move on. Does that sound?
I think that sounds like a lot of fun. Let's see if we can keep people interested for another hour or so.
All right. So I'm going to start with the pre-show. The show kicked off at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time with Neville versus Austin Aries. For the Cruiserweight Championship, which I thought was a solid, very good match that paid off on several things with the ending. Because, Chris, I don't know if you watched the pre-show or not, but...
I did. I watched the whole thing.
Okay. So, you know that Neville poked Austin Aries in the eye to get him disoriented, then do the red arrow and win. And that paid off on two things in a very clever way, I think. And there was a good amount of this kind of thing on the show, which I think elevated it a little bit. First of all, Austin Aries, when he was doing commentary, because he was doing commentary on 205 Live for a couple months up leading up to this, anytime anybody said, "Austin, what do you think somebody's strategy should be for this match?" his response was, "Oh, I think they should just poke him in the eye."
Okay, that I did not realize, but that's pretty great.
So Neville listened to him and poked him in the eye. And also Austin Aries, it paid off on Austin Aries' real life injury of breaking his orbital bone, which made him leave NXT and then do commentary on 205 Live. So it made sense in a way that, you know, the average person who doesn't watch every week, it still makes sense that he got poked in the eye and lost. But if you've been watching and that stuff, you're aware of that stuff, it makes it all the better. So I thought that was a pretty good match.
I thought it was a lot of fun. I have a question for you, Matt, like as an observer.
Sure.
Do you consider being on the pre-show to be... I guess as big of an insult as it would have been, like, even maybe, like, 4 or 5 years ago. Like, now that we've had a couple WrestleManias in a row that are endless, that are, like, so long, and that the pre-show was essentially just the first hour or 2 hours or 90 minutes, I guess, of WrestleMania... Like, even though if you select, like, you know, WrestleMania 33 when you're watching the network, you won't see these matches, do you think it's as much of a big deal that they're not on WrestleMania proper as it would have been in past years?
I think it's more of a perceived insult than a real insult, because people are watching that pre-show.
Yes.
In a way that they weren't, maybe, when it was those pre-shows were all just on, like, YouTube, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's enough of a perceived insult that they moved the SmackDown Women's Championship match from the pre-show to the regular show because people complained about it and saw it as an insult to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved another match to the pre-show that we'll get to in a second.
And I will say, like, I feel like they absolutely used that, the women's title match, as a cool-down match, but that's, like, a complaint that we can get into in a little bit. Like, I don't... Like, if you had to choose... between wrestling in front of a hot crowd who were eager to get started with the pro wrestling at 5:30, or a crowd that had been through 5 hours of wrestling at 10:30 and you're not the main event, like, which would you want to be?
I'd probably rather be in front of that hot crowd.
Yeah. See, I feel the same way, whereas, like, I remember, you know, when Daniel Bryan and Sheamus were supposed to have that match... that U.S. title match years ago, and it got bumped to the pre-show and then also turned into a battle royal. And it was just, like, the worst thing. It was, like, the most... Like, it even shows up in the WWE comic as, like, an example of how, like, it, like, a terrible thing that happened to Daniel Bryan.
I do think that there's a little bit of a coin flip in whether you're going to be in front of that hot clout crowd or whether you're going to be in front of an empty arena. Because this year, people seemed to get into the arena fairly quickly, and there was a pretty full audience for that Neville-Austin Aries match. Last year, all the pre-show matches were basically in a half-empty stadium, because it took for everybody to get into the arena. So, you know, you may win it, you may not. So the next match on the card in the pre-show is the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which was won by Mojo Rawley with the help of Rob Gronkowski, and boy, it was what it was, and that's what it was.
Early in the match, I was watching with Aiden, and early in the match, Aiden just goes, I think this is Mojo Rawley's year. She called it.
Well, now, was that a sarcastic joke, or was she serious?
I don't know.
Because I for sure thought Braun Strowman was going to win it.
I like, when it came down to, like, the crowd had thinned out, and it was like, Dolph Ziggler, I think Sammy was still in there, and it was, like, Mojo Rawley and, like, the big dude from NXT, from Sanity, Killian Dane, I think is his name, and Jinder Mahal. I was like, this is the opposite of the Royal Rumble, because I literally have no idea who is going to win this. who in this crowd is gonna take it home?
There was a point where, after Sammy got eliminated, where Mojo was the only one who made sense. But
yeah. Well, because he had the celebrity guest buddy, which, by the way, they are shoot friends.
Yes, they are shoot friends.
Which is nice. And Rob Gronkowski seems like a guy who genuinely likes wrestling and kind of gets into the spirit of it. I do think it was hilarious that, like, when he hopped the rail to get involved with the ring, like, he's a large man. Like, even in pro wrestling standards, he's a large man. And, like, the tiniest lady security guard, like, ran over to stop him. Like, so it's this tiny lady and fucking Charles Robinson, the little Nate, yep, running over there to stop him from getting in the ring, which I thought was genuinely a good comedy moment.
This is a little bit off topic, but can we talk about how the star power at WrestleMania is so weird and low wattage now compared to, like they used to have Muhammad Ali and Alice Cooper. Like, I mean, Alice Cooper maybe wasn't a big star by WrestleMania 3, but, like, you know, he's a big rock star. They had Ozzy Osbourne. They had legit famous people showing up at WrestleMania and participating in years past. And this year we had Rob Gronkowski and Al Roker, and that was it.
Well, we also had Pitbull and undefeated The Streak Lives, Flo Rida.
Yeah, I mean, we had the musical performers that we have every year. I mean, last year at least we had Snoop Dogg singing or rapping Sasha to the Ring, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's just weird. It's weird that, like, they can't get, like, bigger stars for WrestleMania.
I wonder, they have
Maria Menounos every year.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like Maria Menounos is going to be there regardless. Like, Maria Menounos was in the crowd at SummerSlam when I was there.
She is a legit wrestling fan. Yeah,
she was wearing when I saw her at SummerSlam. She was wearing a homemade Bob Backlund T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
The depth of Maria Menounos being a shoot wrestling fan.
Maria Menounos is legit great. she's
fantastic
in any WWE thing.
Here's my question, I wonder if like you wouldn't think it, right? You wouldn't think that, like, WrestleMania would have any budgetary concerns, because you look at that set and you look at that arena, and that arena's got, you know, 100,000 people in it, and they're all paying, like, massive amounts of money, and they're going to go to Raw the next day, so they're selling, you know, they're selling out of tickets. They cannot possibly lose money on this. But then you think about the, like, what did Brock and Goldberg make? What did Undertaker make for his final match? Like, and I kind of wonder, like, did all the money that would have gone to, I don't know, like the cast of Empire showing up? Like,
yeah,
I say that because I wish it is a thing that would happen.
Yes.
By the way,
oh boy, Terrence Howard on a wrestling event would be very weird. Terrence Howard is a weird guy. But I do wonder, like, you have to even wonder, like, how much they spend on the pyro budget. Because there are a lot of fireworks at WrestleMania this year.
But there were three, like, that's three wrestlers that I'm sure got, like, big paydays out of this. Not to mention, like, you know, everybody else probably, like, I have no idea how the WrestleMania payday works, but I've heard it's good.
It's like five figures. I think everybody gets around five figures for WrestleMania.
Yeah. So. And then you think about, like, you know, well, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure the Hardys got a little something for coming back. Like, I wonder if the celebrity money actually went to wrestlers, and if so, like, that's a thing I would be super into happening. Because I'm not there for fucking Pitbull, you know?
Sure.
Nobody is there for Pitbull, which is the crazy thing.
Except for Ramon Villalobos, who was tweeting very loving gifts of Pitbull while he was performing.
Well, that's true. Well, Ramon is an outlier in any and all cases.
I love Ramon. Coach
is great.
I will say this. If Shaq had shown up and not backed out of his match with Big Show, I wouldn't be saying any of this. Shaq has enough star wattage on his own that I would have accepted it.
There are exceptions to every rule, and the exception for both you and I of we don't really want to see celebrities show up and be the big star at WrestleMania is Shaq.
Yeah, always.
And Pete Rose, and Hall of Famer Pete Rose.
Sure, so. Pete Rose, so he could be tombstoned by Kane.
Yes.
The next match on the pre-show is Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin. Dean Ambrose retained the Intercontinental Championship. I don't really have anything to say about this match.
Literally did not remember anything about, like, I was surprised to find it happened when I opened up Wikipedia to look at the match list.
It was fine. It was a SmackDown match. It could have been on regular TV. Yeah. Okay, on to the regular WrestleMania show. We had New Day open up the show with hosting, which was fine.
Oh, was it fine, Matt? Or did we see the New Day in their Final Fantasy cosplay?
I mean, that was fun. It was pretty fun that Big E had a sword, and Xavier Woods' hair is what really made it.
Xavier Woods' hair is what made it.
Yeah. Then we go on to the first match of the night, which is the first match of the regular show, which is AJ Styles beating Shane McMahon in a surprisingly competitive match. And my tweet about this is, he got a good match out of Shane McMahon, so AJ Styles really is the best wrestler who ever lived.
I don't think Shane is that bad. Like, I think Shane, like, I mean, Shane versus Kurt Angle is, like, genuinely a really good one. I mean, but look, I feel like also Shane is, like, 40, 50. Shane's an older gentleman now.
He's, like, 45. Yeah. Yeah.
He's older than John Cena. He's old, like, and I feel like the logical conclusion to the story would be just AJ, like, coming out and just beating the hell out of him, and, like, and then being like, I'm a professional wrestler. Like, this is my job.
Not only am I a professional wrestler, I'm generally agreed as the best professional wrestler working right now. So,
yeah.
Shane did have two impressive spots. He did the coast to coast, which he could still pull off.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that shooting star press, which was actually impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he for real did a shooting star press.
Yeah. Hey, Shane McMahon has a better shooting star press record at WrestleMania than Brock Lesnar does.
I mean, they both missed, but Shane was supposed to miss.
Yeah.
And Brock was
Shane not. Shane did not nearly murder himself.
Yeah, he did not land on his face. I think this match was better than it I expected or had it had any right to be.
Yeah.
I think that's what I come down.
I don't dislike Shane McMahon as a character. I don't really even dislike Shane McMahon as a wrestler. I think Shane has this weird, like, this weird thing that he falls into where it's like we know that Big Show, like, actually trained in boxing, like, actually went and learned boxing, but that means he can't punch you. Because if Big Show, if a 7 foot tall, you know, formerly 500 pound man punched you with his giant hand, you would die. So his punch, which is his finishing move, looks terrible. Because he's just kind of like it's like he's singing a happy song.
He has to pull it. He has to pull it so hard to make sure he's not going to kill somebody.
Yeah, whereas with Shane, like, we know that Shane is, like, big into training Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu. And, like, the moments that in that match where he looked good is, like, I think he accidentally did, like, shoot knees on AJ. Like, he does, like, he hits a good, like, running knee on him in the corner at one point. But it's, you know, Shane's punches are terrible because Shane can't really punch you. Because he's a guy who actually knows how to punch you.
And I mean, so I feel like I think the choices for opponents for Shane over the last 2 years, Undertaker and then AJ Styles, I think they tried to pick guys that if Shane really did hit him stiff, it'd be okay. Like, they'd be all right, and they're used to working that kind of match. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right on that point.
Yeah, well, you want to put for all that he is a guy who's had multiple wrestling matches, he's a non-wrestler. So you want to put a non-wrestler in a match with someone who can carry the non-wrestler, you know, someone who is a trusted hand, whether it's Undertaker, whether it's AJ. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think, you know, AJ got the match out of Shane, so.
So congratulations, AJ Styles. You are going to be... I think AJ's going to be the new Undertaker. I think he's going to be the guy, whether there's a title involved or not, that everybody's going to want to have a WrestleMania match with.
I think you're probably right.
Next up, we have Kevin Owens defeating Chris Jericho for the U.S. title, which was a very solid match. Like I said, I think everybody's going to remember Owens putting the one finger on the rope to break the pin. Or was it a submission? I can't remember. But I've been seeing tweets that show the birth of Kevin Owens painting from the Festival of Friendship, where he has the one finger out in the painting. And I don't know if that's an intentional reference to the painting or not, but if it is, it's amazing.
I would almost guarantee that it is.
Much like the poke him in the eye thing with Neville and Aries, that takes that little storytelling thing to the next level. If it's a callback.
Yeah. Well, it's because, like, who are going to be the guys who think that through? It's going to be fucking Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Like they're like Kevin Owens is, I mean, like, you know, we've talked about how the most successful character in pro wrestling is guy who actually watches the show. Kevin Owens is the guy who watches the show.
I mean, that's his thing. Like,
yeah,
he has some kind of like meta knowledge of the show. And so
it's not even meta knowledge. He just pays attention.
Yeah. I feel like, but in like a character sense, it feels like he is aware of the tropes that wrestlers otherwise are not supposed to be aware of in storyline.
Yeah.
Which is what makes him great.
Well, it's like the Samoa Joe thing of like just, you know, just slightly turning around and walking away when someone jumps off the top rope at you. You don't have to stand there. Like, yeah. You could just leave. And you know, and Owens has done that too. Like, it's, I feel like if you're going to trust any two guys in the company to really tell a story, it's going to be those two. And I think that, like, this was probably my favorite match of the night.
Me too. It was the only match where people exchanged finishers.
Yeah.
Which is a very common WrestleMania thing. But this is the only match where it happened, because Owens put Jericho in the Walls of Jericho. I don't think Jericho did a pop-up powerbomb. But and it did finish on a pop-up powerbomb on the apron, which was very appropriate.
It's the hardest part of the ring.
It is the hardest part of the ring. I said I went to a WrestleMania party, and when that happened, I shouted. I, like, exclaimed, "That's the hardest part of the ring!" And nobody, like, everybody no-sold it.
See, Matt, that's what you get for not watching WrestleMania with me this year.
Yeah,
that is your punishment for your betrayal.
Look, it's not a betrayal. It just didn't work out. I wanted to, but yeah,
you are the Kevin Owens of this podcast.
Oh, Chris, you are never my best friend. The whole like Owens yelling. Stuff like that, again, also takes things to another level. Like, there are a few things better than Kevin Owens yelling.
Well, I loved that in this match, like, Jericho was kind of like doing wrestler thing. You know, like, you can hear him say, like, at one point, he's like, "Come on, you son of a bitch," which is, like, a really, like, standard, like, wrestler thing to say. But like, when Kevin Owens yelled, "You were never my friend," at him, like, that's, like, when I gasped.
Yeah.
And I love that that's, like, there was a title involved in this match, obviously, but I love that that's what this match was about, was that Kevin Owens doesn't want to have friends.
Next up on the card is the Raw Women's title match. Bayley retained her championship, surprisingly, against Charlotte, Nia Jax, and Sasha Banks. And
really,
I feel like,
surprisingly.
Yeah, very surprisingly. I thought for sure this was Charlotte's to lose. Or Charlotte's... I fully expected Charlotte to win the match. The way I feel about it is the way I felt about the Raw Women's Division, like, generally for months now. Which is... lots of great in-ring work, like, across the board impressive. There are very few people on Charlotte's level in the entire company, maybe AJ Styles. But then the finish is baffling.
Because mm-hmm. It felt like it came out of nowhere, too, and not in, like, the good RKO sort of way.
It's one of a couple finishers that felt like anti-climaxes in this WrestleMania. Like, there were several title matches that ended with anti-climax finishes, and we'll get to those later. But yeah, it just ended without paying off on any of the story they were doing about Sasha probably turning on Bayley.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like,
well,
good in-ring work, but, like, basically no story.
The weird thing about WrestleMania now is that, like, it's the weird thing about pro wrestling in that there's no off season. They never take a break. Like, it goes all year long because it's entertainment. So there has to be another one. And so, like, if Sasha doesn't turn tonight on Raw, I will be shocked. I will be absolutely shocked.
Yeah, my tweet about it was, well, I guess they're saving the Sasha turn for tomorrow.
I've actually got a couple thoughts about this. First of all, I thought for sure it was going to be Nia Jax. And I thought Nia Jax was just going to, like, be built as this super strong monster. And just, like, destroy everybody. Because what would be better than that, and then you've got Sasha versus Bayley. You've got, you know, Charlotte chasing Nia, and she gets to do, you know, they get to do Flair versus Vader, and then Asuka comes up. Like, that's, like, that seems like it writes itself, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I honestly thought it would be Nia Jax, and then when she was eliminated, I was just like, okay, well, this is taking a bit of a different direction. The other thing is that Bayley needs to change. Bayley, like, and I don't mean she needs to turn heel, because I think that would be not a service to her character, but I feel like Bayley can only be happy to be here so long. Bayley at this point needs to come out and be like, hey, I love the fans, I love wrestling, I love my opponents, like, I am still a good person, but I am no longer just happy to be here. I won the women's title. Like, I retained the women's title in a elimination four-way at WrestleMania. I am here now. Like, I she needs to evolve into being a more, like, earnest, like, babyface champion. I think she needs to, like, kind of evolve into being John Cena, you know?
Well, I mean, I've always described her as the John Cena for little girls, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what they want her to be.
Yeah. I think, clearly.
And I think that's good. I think there should be that, right? But I think you're right. I think the main thing that she needs is to be portrayed as somebody who can make her own decisions. If you're not going to pay off on the story of the consequences of her letting Sasha Banks lead her around.
Yeah.
Which is what the story has been up to this point.
Well, because here's the problem. If Sasha Banks turns heel tonight, like, Sasha's going to be great. Sasha is... I think Sasha is one of the best, like, performers on the roster, just in general.
Yeah.
Like, she's good at wrestling, but she's, like, so... Like, she has such good character work, too.
She's got presence in spades.
Yeah. But, like, if she turns on Bayley, then that is another version of the same fucking Bayley feud. And you can't always have Bayley be the one who is acted upon. Bayley needs to be the actor. Bayley needs to be the, like, has to have motivation beyond a friend turned on me. Because then she's just fucking Sting, except she's the worst part of Sting. You know?
Always gets burned by trusting other people.
I think there could be some really, I think there could be some really good like Sting Lex Luger stuff with Bayley and Sasha. If Sasha turns but she doesn't turn on Bayley, and Bayley's in this position where she's like, I'm a good person, and my best friend is kind of shitty, but she's still my friend. Like, then I think that's an interesting story. I feel like we're gonna get a lot of I don't want to see the same things over and over, and I worry that Bayley's gonna fall into that trap. And also, like, you know, John Cena for little girls often translates into John Cena, but she's a woman who is weirdly infantilized but still has, like, gigantic false eyelashes.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
No, that is certainly an issue.
Yeah.
The thing about not wanting to see the same thing over and over again, I think that is the biggest problem with the Raw Women's Division, is that it is very repetitive, and they've got to figure out a way to freshen it up and get things moving around, because they figured it out on SmackDown. They figured a way how to keep the SmackDown Women's Division fresh, and it has as small of a roster as Raw, so they need to figure it out. They need to get it going.
And there is nothing wrong with those characters. Like, if you've ever been like, oh, what if Ric Flair and Sting and Eddie Guerrero and Vader in their prime were all, like, together? Like, imagine the stories we could tell with them. Well, guess what, everybody? Like, you have that now. Not to reduce those wrestlers to their male equivalents, but, like, if you can write those stories, you can write these stories, and I don't know why you wouldn't.
They do fit those character types, yeah. For sure.
Well, and you know, in the case of Sasha and Eddie, like, very conscientiously. So
yeah. Next up, we have the 4-way tag team ladder match for the WWE Raw Tag Team Championship between Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, Cesaro and Sheamus, Enzo and Big Cass, and the surprise appearance of the Hardy Boys, which was the pop of the night, and very, like, a very, very pleasant surprise to see the Hardys show up.
Matt, do you remember last year when we were at your house, we were watching WrestleMania, and Stone Cold's glass shattered?
Yes.
And you got so excited that you, like, looked at me with a big smile on your face, and then you kind of, like, took a lap around the room?
Yeah. It was, in retrospect, the moment that preceded was not worth that, but it's what I felt in the moment. I do remember that, yes.
When the Hardys music hit, and Aiden was like, whose music is that? And I was like, that's the Hardys. And they came out. Her reaction dwarfed yours. Which is hilarious, because Aiden, this was literally the first Hardy Boys match Aiden has ever seen. She only knows the Hardys as Broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero, and she was so excited to see them back.
I mean, look, they have earned it. They have earned this. Like, Matt Hardy was persona non grata at WWE. He was not welcome. And by virtue of creating an amazing character and doing some of the best comedy of 2016, He got the biggest pop at WrestleMania, him and Jeff. And they're kind of like a weird amalgam of their former WWE selves and the, you know, Broken Matt and Brother Nero. because Matt still had the streak in his hair, right? Mm-hmm. And he did a promo after they won where he was talking like Broken Matt. But they were in their, like, old gear. Their old, like, 2003-ass gear, right?
Well, no. That's just what Jeff wears.
But he didn't wear that when he was Brother Nero, like, when they were in the tag team in TNA.
No, he was dressed as Jeff Hardy, I guess. But, like, that is what Jeff was wearing to wrestle as late as May of last year.
Yeah.
Like, here's what's crazy. Remember sitting in HeroesCon talking about, when the Broken Matt Hardy stuff first started, and we were like, how in on it is he? It turns out 100%. He masterminded it. He did it. Yeah. He pulled it off.
He is brilliant. Matt Hardy is brilliant. And he did everything to earn that spot.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That's why they got such a huge reaction, because they earned it. Nothing was given to the Hardys, right? They did this. They, by force of will and creativity, brought themselves back.
Here's what's like super nuts about this, Matt. Do you know where the Hardys were Saturday night?
They were in a Ring of Honor show.
They did a fucking ladder match.
Yeah.
At Ring of Honor. At WrestleCon. And like Aiden was talking about it, and she's like, oh my god. They got booked on the ring, like, they did a Ring of Honor show because it was WrestleCon. And so if anybody saw them in Orlando, it would still be a surprise when they showed back up on WrestleMania. And I was like, god damn it, you're right. Like, layers upon layers for Brother Nero and Broken Matt.
They're still booked for indie shows. Like, upcoming.
They're the WWE Tag Team Champions right now.
They're still booked for indie shows. And my assumption is they're going to show up for them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And we've seen that before. DIY for a long time had a deal with NXT where they could still show up on indie bookings as long as they, you know, were not, like, televised. But, like, they were not – they did not show up at WrestleMania and win the tag team championships.
not to leave it just talking about the Hardys in this match, even though, like, they're obviously the big draw of the match and what people were paying attention to. I did think it was weird that they had New Day come out to say that the Hardys were being added to the match, because it seemed like they were going to add themselves, especially since they were wearing wrestling gear.
Oh, yeah. I kind of think that was brilliant.
It was kind of brilliant, but it was also kind of shitty for the New Day.
It was kind of shitty for the New Day, but it was a great misdirect.
Sure.
And I think, honestly, I think the New Day did, like, a really... Like, the New Day are wrestlers, and they should be wrestling. But I think the New Day did, like, of all the WrestleMania hosts that we've seen...
Oh, easily, way better than The Rock. Those two WrestleMania.
I think it might have been Graves, when the New Day came out. Like, it was Graves or maybe JBL. They were they're the hosts. They can't just add themselves to a match. And I was like, have you watched the show?
It must have been Graves, because JBL was only doing the SmackDown matches.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I don't want to totally leave out the other competitors in the match, because it was Cesaro and Sheamus who took that ladder spot from Jeff.
Well, it was Cesaro.
I mean, he hit Sheamus.
Sheamus just sort of rolled off the ladder
He landed on Sheamus a little bit, but it was Cesaro's ladder that broke. And if I was going to put anybody underneath Jeff for that spot, it would be Cesaro. Cesaro took that like a champ. Enzo and Cass were surprisingly good in the match, because I thought Enzo was going to break apart in a ladder match, and he did okay. And you know, the club were in there doing good work too. But the Hardys really did steal the show. Like, there's no getting around it.
And the match kind of felt weirdly short for it to be a multi-team tag team ladder match. But I mean, like it, It was you know, a few minutes of spots and we're out of here. Because, like, what are they going to do that's going to pop the crowd more than the Hardys showing up and then Jeff jumping off a ladder, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you got what you wanted out of the match, I think. It was 11 minutes. It was about a minute shorter than the Raw Women's Championship match.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, that's about enough time. Next on the card is John Cena and Nikki Bella defeating The Miz and Maryse. And then John Cena proposed to Nikki Bella. The match was what it was. It was fine.
And then genuinely liked that this match played out kind of the only way it could, which is it makes all the sense in the world if you look at it, but when you really think about it, it's super weird. John Cena as the face in peril, building to the hot tag to Nikki Bella. Which means that Miz dominated John Cena for almost the entirety of this match.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good structure for the match. But, John Cena and Nikki Bella sucked all the air out of the room and made you forget everything that happened in the match with the proposal, which was the big thing it was all leading up to anyway.
Yeah.
Then we have the longest match of the night. Seth Rollins coming back from another knee injury to finally defeat Triple H in an unsanctioned match that involved chairs, a sledgehammer, the tables, the announce tables, and other various plunder. I don't remember what else was used in the match, but the sledgehammer ended up kind of really coming into play, as it often does in Triple H matches. And if this had been earlier on the card, I think this gets back to, Chris, your question about would you rather be in front of that hot crowd or in front of a crowd that's already been there for, you know, 2.5 or 3 hours. This is the match where it started feeling like this has been going on for a while.
Yeah.
And this was a 25-minute match that felt like 45 minutes.
It felt like... I did like the match, though. This is probably my second favorite of the night after Owens and Jericho. There's, like, was some really interesting stuff with, the knee really coming into play. I thought Triple H's entrance was, like, hilarious, because it's such a what does a dad think is cool?
The tweet that said only Stephanie McMahon would think a cool motorcycle, like a cool heavy metal motorcycle entrance, would also have a police escort.
Yeah. Did you notice that, like, that was the biggest entrance stunt of the entire evening?
There were not a lot of
was,
big
entrance. Like,
I mean, Sasha yeah. came out with Sasha's involved a car.
Sasha's came out on a car, but, like, it looked like a fucking Plymouth Prowler. It was I keep waiting for those big, you know, John Cena with a Tommy gun, or like the army of John Cena's, or even where were the fucking druids, dude?
Or even like a band playing somebody out, right?
Yeah,
they didn't do it. Only Triple H and Sasha got like big entrances.
Yeah, they got, like, accessories. And, like, I guess the excuse is they have that ring, or that ramp, where that ramp was, like, fucking 100 yards long and was an active screen, you know, which is very cool.
Yeah.
And they tried to do some, like, really cool stuff with it, like with Randy Orton's entrance.
Oh, boy.
Like, yeah, remember when John Cena fucking Fast and Furious his way into the arena and crashed through a glass wall in a sports car?
Remember when the Wyatt family came out to a live band playing their entrance music that were wearing doctor masks?
Yeah, plague doctors. Yeah, like, CM Punk had fucking Living Color.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want, like, celebrity stuff at WrestleMania, but that is the kind of mainstream spectacle that I want. Like, I want, like, druids. I want, like, because remember last year, nobody really had a big entrance either, except Triple H, when Stephanie McMahon came out as the Barbarian Queen of the Wastelands and told us we were all slaves.
Yes.
Like, and that was intense. But, like, we didn't really get any of that this year, and everybody was wearing a fucking leather vest.
Everybody had Stone Cold vests.
Everybody! Fucking Alexa Bliss had a Stone Cold vest!
I don't get it. I don't get why there were so many of those, but boy, were there a lot of Stone Cold vests. No, I thought the storytelling with the knee was good. Stephanie took her one bump through a table this year, which was neat. That bump spot that Stephanie does is always the same, mm-hmm. where Triple H has to accidentally bump her or accidentally move out of the way so that somebody can bump her. Mm-hmm. It's always got to be an accident, and that's good. But
you've been doing that shit since 99, my dude.
Boy, oh boy. It is always the same Stephanie bump spot. But I do have to give it to Stephanie that she will take those bumps. And then, you know, Seth winning is good. Like, I didn't hate the match, but it was too long. Like, it got good maybe in the last 10 minutes.
It would have been the perfect main event of, like, a SummerSlam or even, like, a Fastlane or an Extreme Rules even, where, like, it didn't have to come, like, at 10 o'clock after we'd been watching wrestling since 5.
Yeah, if this had been the end of a 3-hour pay-per-view, I don't think I would have been like, ugh, this is going on forever, like I was. Okay. Next up, we have what is sadly, I think, the stinker of the night. Randy Orton defeated Bray Wyatt for the WWE Championship.
Yep.
And I hate that it was the stinker. I hate it. I hate that Randy Orton had that dumb-ass snake following him down the ramp. I hate
that. That could have looked cool. There's a universe in which that looked really cool.
Yeah, but it did.
Because if you saw it from, like, I was literally in another room. I was in the bedroom, and they did that big overhead shot, and you could see him walking down with the snake under him. And I was like, oh, that looks cool as hell. And then I came back into the room, and then you see that it's all, like, super fucking jumpy, like it's happening on a PS1.
Well, I think it was because it was trying to stay under his feet.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working right somehow. I don't know. It looked weird. And then all the gimmicky stuff with the projections onto the ring of the, like, worms and maggots and roaches. I get what they were going for, but it just came off as goofy. And the match, like people just want Bray Wyatt to be cool and win matches.
Yeah.
That's what they want. And WWE refuses to give it to the audience. Like,
I really feel like they...
Go ahead. He looked dumb and goofy, and he lost.
I really think they have poisoned the well with Bray Wyatt. Like, there was a time when I think we were all ready for Bray Wyatt to be, like, the fucking post-crisis Undertaker, you know? Like, remember when Bray Wyatt broke his nose and had to, like, wear the mask to protect his nose, and so he came out in a butcher's apron, and he talked about how people had... he'd been getting cheered because people had forgotten he was a fucking monster? Like, where's that shit, you know? Like, and I will say, I thought the build for this match was kind of surprisingly interesting. Randy Orton, like, finally paying off the he hears voices thing with Bray Wyatt in a way that made sense. And then Randy being like, yeah, but, like, I'm also Randy Orton. I'm gonna burn down your house.
they skipped a chapter on that. There should have been some kind of connective tissue between, I'm not gonna wrestle you at WrestleMania because I'm totally devoted to you, and now I'm burning down your house. That was kind of whiplash-inducing. There should have been a step in there to get from point A to point C. But, like, some of that was interesting. But, like, I just don't – again, I don't know why they can't get it together and figure out what the audience wants with Bray Wyatt. Because they desperately want to like Bray Wyatt. They desperately want to see him win matches and be cool. Why can't they do it? Why?
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
All right. And Randy Orton is boring. He's always been boring, and he will never not be boring. Sorry.
I mean, look, you're not wrong.
This was another match that had a anti-climax ending, by the way. It ended on an RKO, but it kind of happened, like, not just out of nowhere, but, like, weirdly out of sequence. Like, it just happened, and then the match was over. All right. Next, we have Brock Lesnar winning the WWE Universal Championship from our old boy Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
And this match was exactly what it needed to be. I hate Brock Lesnar, and I hate that he won, but that was kind of a foregone conclusion that that was going to happen. And I am very glad that this match was only 5 minutes long. And yeah. They both got their shit in, and that was it.
Yeah. It was... Hey, sir, you want to talk about WrestleMania? What'd you think? You were asleep when Lesnar Goldberg happened. That's where we were at.
Yeah. Yes, I was. Was that when I went to sleep?
No, you went to sleep. You went to sleep when Randy Orton was wrestling Bray Wyatt.
Right, I did.
You saw Randy Orton come out, and you were like, I am done.
That was night. I saw the worms, and I tapped out.
That was nappy time. That was time for naps.
Matt says that was nappy time. Yeah, I thought this match was kind of surprisingly really fun. And I think it's always worth noting, WWE's camera crew is the fucking best.
Yeah, they're great.
They're so good. Like, after that third German suplex, when Lesnar literally just turns around and the camera follows him and all of a sudden he's getting speared by Goldberg, like, that was a really, really great bit.
There were good moments in the match, like Lesnar kicking out of the jackhammer was good. Like there and the spear through the barricade. Good. Yeah. Like there was a lot that was good about this match, and this was where the energy of the show picked back up. Cuz I feel like
it really did.
The energy dipped during the Rollins Triple H match and during Randy Orton Bray Wyatt, and then it picked back up with Lesnar Goldberg.
I think you can I think the guys at the Attitude Era podcast Twitter said that this match is just like, you really just want to see two giant pieces of ham hitting each other. And that's what it was. And I think we were all kind of worried that it would be...
What we were worried about was that they were going to try to put on a 20-minute wrestling match.
Yeah, a competitive 20-minute match, which would have been a nightmare.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of, like, I think everybody kind of expected this to be the main event. Like, I don't think we expected this to be the Undertaker's retirement match.
Yeah. I was confused. I was very confused that this wasn't the main event.
I was like, I can't believe they bumped the women's title match off the show. That's ridiculous.
That too. Like, I think everybody at the party that I was at was like, are they going to do the women's title match? And we were also like, so, and where's Undertaker Roman? And at some point, after I had tweeted that yard caretakership was more important than any title in WWE.
A good line, by the way.
Thank you. I realized, oh, this is Undertaker's last match.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Yeah. When they brought out fucking Jim Ross.
Yeah. That was it. That, like... That was the clue that... also, can Jim Ross come back? But we'll get to that match in a minute.
Yeah.
Let's talk first about the six-pack challenge for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship, where Naomi finally got the title back from Alexa Bliss, and also Becky Lynch, Carmella, Mickie James, and Natalya were in the match.
First of all, this match was 5 minutes and 35 seconds long, which is, to be entirely fair, 50 seconds longer than the Universal Championship match.
Yeah.
Just a heads up. But also, like, and it was probably the best 5 minute and 35 second match it could be. Like, everybody seemed to be able to get their shit in. We kind of got some big entrances and some WrestleMania looks.
But they were rushing. So, like, the match was rushed.
The match is rushed.
Because I'm sure they were told in Gorilla, hey, make this fast. right?
Yeah.
So they had to really rush to get their shit in, and as a result, some of the in-ring stuff was sloppy, and I don't think that's the fault of the performers. I think that's them trying to rush through everything. But there were a couple moments where, you know, some stuff got missed, or that double sharpshooter that Natalya did, like, she was trying to put it on really quick, and so she didn't get it locked in the way she normally does. All the downsides of this match were that it was rushed. And that's not the performer's fault.
And it's, like, one of the big downsides is that Naomi's entrance. Like, look, we all knew Naomi was going to win. Because, you know, she's they built the story, WrestleMania in her hometown, injured, has to give up the championship. Good story, by the way. Like, very, very good story. But then, like, when your entrance is as long as the match, like, we know who's going to win.
Yeah. Even though I love Naomi's entrance, and I think it's the best.
I thought Naomi's entrance was the best.
I think Naomi is the best.
I may be, like, legit in love with Alexa Bliss.
Sure. Alexa's great.
Yeah, because, Matt, I don't know if you know this. Alexa Bliss is a former magical girl who is now, I guess, Harley Quinn, but for the Riddler. And she's so mean. And that's my interests. Like, that's all of them. She's a pro-wrestling magical girl supervillain who is very, very mean.
Listen, I don't want to get too male gazy on here, so apologies for this, but Alexa Bliss checks a lot of my boxes.
Mm-hmm.
When she started wearing Freddy Krueger sweaters and had that metal thing on her hand, like those metal claws on her hand, I was like, yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, like Alexa Bliss is very, very pretty. But when she start, like, and also, like, her face acting is the best. Like in the company, nobody's, like, reactions are, right now, are better than Alexa Bliss's. But when she started being, like, a mean girl, it's, like, I'm done.
Like, no,
she's a mean girl with a bad dip dye job? Okay, yeah, here we go.
Alexa Bliss was pretty and talented, the whole time. But she started checking those boxes when she got mean. Let me tell you. Anyway,
we talked about Sasha being Eddie, Charlotte being Flair, Nia Jax being Vader. Alexa Bliss is Chris Jericho.
That's not wrong.
I think she could genuinely, be the Chris Jericho of the women's division in the best possible way. Becky Lynch needs to change her hair back, though. I will. Becky Lynch's hair at WrestleMania was the worst.
She was going for, like, a Vikings thing, I think.
It was not the best.
And the debate over Mickie James's entrance gear, I will let that stay on Twitter. I don't know what to say about it, because I don't know. It looked kind of bad, but I don't know. Like, I am not equipped to critique knowledgeably what was going on with what Mickie James was wearing on her head. That's all I'll say about that. As for the match, I'm super glad that Naomi won. I think she totally deserves to have won that title back. And despite it being rushed, it, again, super high energy match and exciting, and overall a very good match that they only had 5 minutes to cram everything into, I think.
Yeah, as good as it's going to get, I think. When you have that short of time. And I'm glad it didn't get bumped off the show. I wish it hadn't been the cooldown match. But, you know, be that as it may, it was what it was.
And finally, we have Roman Reigns doing what he said he was going to do, retiring The Undertaker. I don't know if I can view this match through clear eyes, because I was so exhausted by the time it started. And then it was 23 minutes long. And I was really waiting for Roman Reigns to pull something new out of the bag of tricks. And he didn't do it. He just ran the ropes a couple times, then did another spear as the finish.
That fucking running the ropes to do the spear, God bless Jim Ross for trying. God bless him for just, like, really working hard to make that shit sound like it wasn't the dumbest thing in the world.
Oh, he's gaining momentum!
It's like, I've watched a lot of pro wrestling, and I've watched Jim Ross call a lot of matches, and you can tell when he thinks something's stupid, but God damn it, he's gonna do his best. And, like, when Roman's, like, going for the fucking rock bottom...
I don't want to make this a retrospective on Jim Ross,
mm-hmm.
but that is what makes Jim Ross such a better play-by-play guy than Michael Cole. Because one of the things about Michael Cole, and he's maybe gotten a little better about it in the last couple years, but for the longest time, when Michael Cole thought something was stupid, you could hear it. You could hear the derision and like sarcasm in his voice, and sometimes he wouldn't fucking care. He would just say, "This is stupid." Jim Ross never did that. Even if Jim Ross thought something was stupid, he would do everything he could to put it over. Everything.
Yeah. I mean, Jim Ross is one of those guys who doesn't think women should wrestle men, but like he certainly called those matches with China and Jericho, and like the commentary did, like he didn't spend the whole time being like, "This is stupid.
Yeah.
I don't like this." Like, but man, when Roman Reigns was running the ropes to get a super speed Superman punch, Jesus.
I thought he was going to pull out some kind of new finisher or something instead of just doing
something,
a
anything.
Because he had speared Undertaker like 5 times to that point. He had Superman punched him 8 times. Like, this is when I realized that, like I generally think Roman is a pretty good in-ring performer. But he kind of only has 4 moves. It's the John Cena thing all over again. He's got the spear. He's got the Superman punch. He's got a Samoan drop. He'll do just, like, working punches, and he does the drive-by. That's 5. What else does he do?
Yeah, like, I really want him to, like, he's, when you're wrestling the fucking Undertaker in the main event of WrestleMania, you gotta do a new move. Fucking tombstone him!
I don't think they would, I'm sure he would have tried it, but I bet they told him not to.
I'm sure he did. But... Like, look, if I was the Undertaker, I wouldn't want to get tombstone, but you got to do something. Give him the last ride. Do something, you know?
Do the old school on him.
Maybe
Roman can't do the old school, I don't know. But, like, do something.
If this is going to be Undertaker's last match, you can't just beat him with your finisher if you hit it for the 8th time. That's fucking stupid.
And run the ropes into his God damn it.
Yeah. Like, and look, we can say it. This match was boring. This match was bad. And... Undertaker should have retired after Lesnar beat him. Undertaker should have, like, when the streak was broken, Undertaker should have retired. And I understand not wanting that to be your retirement match, because, you know, you were concussed for 90% of it or whatever. But, like, think about the matches he's had since. It was fucking Bray Wyatt and Shane McMahon.
He had a rematch with Lesnar at SummerSlam.
And then this, which I think is like the one of legitimately the worst Undertaker matches I've ever seen. It's very bad.
I mean, Undertaker was actually moving around and doing more than I expected him to.
Yeah, no, I thought Undertaker looked fine,
but it just wasn't exciting.
Yeah, I'm not saying Undertaker at, you know, God, what, how old is he? He's 52 years old. I'm not saying Mean Mark needs to do the plancha like he used to do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying he needs to be doing, like, you know, all this stuff. But Roman's like 25.
Roman's like
Roman
30.
should be putting the work. He's 31. Roman should be carrying the work, you know? Like, Roman should be carrying the match. Roman should be, if anybody needs to do new stuff, it needs to be Roman. And like, unfortunately that didn't happen. And so the most memorable thing of this entire match for The Undertaker is Undertaker losing, putting his hat and coat on, and then taking his coat and hat off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was like a very well, like, it's a good moment. Undertaker deserves that. Long career. Locker room leader. Bone Street crew.
Well, this match didn't do that. Like, if Roman had only done his, like, limited moveset and just murked The Undertaker, like, beaten him in, you know, 2 minutes, and gotten, like, a lot of heel heat for it, that would have been one thing. But they couldn't do that because this was Undertaker's retirement match.
Yeah.
So Roman only had to get, like, medium heel heat, if heel heat at all. It's still uncertain, his alignment, right? Unless he comes out tonight on Raw and, like, gives like a blistering heel promo about how he retired The Undertaker, which I hope and pray he does. But like, because it was a 25-minute match and it took him that long to beat up an old man, like, Roman doesn't come out of it looking great, to be honest.
Roman doesn't come out looking great. And Roman, like, if there was a time for Roman to have new gear, if there was a time for Roman to have a new look and new moves, this was it. And it was like, if it wasn't The Undertaker, this would be a Raw match. If this was, like, this could have been Roman and Kane and could have been on Raw. Like, like, shot for shot, go in and digitally replace him.
I will say, I think the match is really an afterthought. What people are going to remember is the moment of Undertaker leaving his stuff in the ring and walking out, which is fine.
But think about fucking Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels. That was a good ass match.
They had a classic. They had a classic match.
Think about fucking Undertaker versus Shawn. Shawn's retirement match. Like, it should have been better, and it's a real shame that it wasn't, because it's always going to be Undertaker's retirement match.
But Shawn Michaels is Shawn Michaels, and Roman Reigns is Roman Reigns.
I mean, yeah, that's unfortunate. Was it you that I was talking to where I was like, I think it was because we talked about it last week on the show, where I was like, absolutely what should have happened in this match is Roman comes out, and then, like, you hear the bong, and then instead of Undertaker's music playing, you hear Dead Man Walking, keep rolling, and, like, he rides out on a motorcycle as American Badass Undertaker. Like, that would have been delightful.
Yeah, somebody suggested that as a way to get Roman over as a face, because he would have beaten up Biker Taker. He would have beaten Biker Taker instead of, you know, you have to respect him, Dead Man Undertaker. One last note before we wrap up. I mentioned at the party I was at that, because somebody was like, "Man, Undertaker looks super old," and I was like, "Yeah, he's like 53," and then I was like, "But you know, Goldberg is 50," and Goldberg took more bumps in his match against Lesnar than he has taken in I don't know how long. But the difference is, Undertaker was wrestling a full schedule until, what, 5 years ago?
5 or 6, yeah. Like
his
pretty
mid to late 40s.
Yeah.
And Goldberg hasn't been wrestling regularly in 15 years.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. That's the difference between somebody who's been wrestling their whole life for a full career and somebody who wrestled for maybe 4 years, 4 or 5 years with a big break in there in the middle of that. And then was gone for 15 years and comes back at 50.
Yeah.
So wrestling will break your heart. Wrestling will break your heart, everybody.
Yep, I hope everybody's ready for Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, because that's what's coming.
That might happen tonight.
I hope that shit doesn't last till goddamn SummerSlam. Can you even imagine?
Well, we'll see where it goes. Thank you for listening to our WrestleMania special, everybody. We hope you have enjoyed our discussion of each of the matches. I think, Chris, this is probably just where we're going to wrap it up. If you would like to email us either an Every Story Ever list, a panel president list, if you just want to send us a comment, send us a question, if you want to sponsor the show, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You could also ask listener questions on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. It's also where the Every Story Ever and Panel President lists reside. And those lists have both been fairly recently updated. I think I need to update the Every Story Ever list with the newest special. But it is at least updated through February. And Chris, I think it's time now. But wait, check us out on iTunes also. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. The more good reviews that we get, the more eyeballs and earballs we get on the show. And now we've reached a point of the show where we tell you where you can find us online. For me, you just go to mattdwilson.net and you'll find links to all of my various things. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find my stuff by going to the-isb.com. You can find links there to... I guess I got to go change that page now. That's a thing I got to do tonight. You can find links to my archive at Comics Alliance. You can also find links to the comics that I write, including the comics that I do for Marvel, as well as the sort of self-published comics like Skater X and Dracula the Unconquered. You can also find links to other podcasts that I do. There's Ajax, obviously, but there's also Movie Fighters. There's also Sailor Business and Xena Warrior Business, all of which are Patreon-supported. But yeah, I'm also on Twitter, at the ISB, and on, Tumblr, theisb.tumblr.com.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of War Rocket Ajax. Sorry that it's a little late, everybody, but we wanted to talk about WrestleMania after the fact, and we hope, that was fun, as fun for you as it was for us. Christy, we want to talk about an organization people can donate to?
I think this week, rather than a specific organization, I would like to say that Patreon has been like a really great service, you know, for you and me, for the podcast that we do. But there are so many creators out there, creators who are maybe from marginalized groups, LGBTQ creators, black creators, people out there who are working outside of what you might consider mainstream comics or mainstream podcasting and doing incredible, incredible work. So I would say this week, rather than going to a large overarching charity organization, find an artist you like, find a podcaster whose work you enjoy. Not us. We've already plugged our stuff, but find creators you enjoy and check and see what they've got, because a lot of times you can get access to some really, really great stuff. Just recent stuff that I've seen, Elizabeth Simmons, Ryan Tsai has one, you know, Kieran and Helena have one for their podcast, Elle and Megan, who, if you enjoyed our wrestling discussion, Hard Times and Into It is going to be making a comeback too. Absolutely worth everything that you can throw at them. And maybe drop a couple of bucks their way too.
And like Chris was saying, a lot of the Comics Alliance diaspora, the people who made Comics Alliance their full-time job, also have Patreons that you can help out if that would be in your interest. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of War Rocket Ajax. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode. We love you.
Yeah! Flash. Hey, Flash! From this day on,